What high school is that?
Excelsior. In Norwalk. But I was lucky, none of my kids went in for any of that, and I said one day, how were we so lucky that you didn't go in, get caught up in any of that stuff? And my oldest son told me that I wasn't raising a bunch of dummies. There was a gas station across the street from the school that had a big barn in back of it, and the man that ran that, he and his father, they had made the upstairs available to the kids and was selling them prophylactics. They could get all they wanted down there. Well, they were put out of business when they authorities finally found out about it. A couple of the girls turned up pregnant. The old man and his son both went to prison for it. And that was one of the few times that they've ever done anything like that around. But there again, I was lucky my kids weren't involved in any of that. That was several years after the war, though.
What made you decide to move to Azusa?
Artesia,
I'm sorry.
Well, that was the only place I could find a house that was halfway close to Douglas, and I didn't want to drive 25, 30 miles all the time. And they were building this subdivision. There were just small houses, very small houses, four rooms. And they were inexpensive. And I got one with, like I said, my signature. I didn't have to put up, nobody else co-signed for it.
Had you been able to save money while you were working?
No way. I had no money saved at all. It took every dime. You're buying shoes for kids, clothes. And like I said, groceries, you just couldn't bring them in fast enough. And it seemed like the war was going to go on and on and on and on forever. And all of a sudden, it was over in Europe. And we wondered how long the Japanese could hold out. And the night that they finally announced that the war was over, they had the wildest time down there you ever saw. They closed down. All the machinery was shut off. And everybody went pouring out of the buildings. There was parties not in the plant. They had a big conga line all around the plant. I guess it went on for hours, but our supervisor invited a couple dozen of us over to his place, And we went over there and had a couple of drinks, and I went home. And then you went back to work 3 days later, and you had no job. There were like 35, get my figures somewhere straight, 35, somewhere between 35 and 40,000 people laid off, just like that. Very few of them were kept on. And you didn't know what was ahead of you. Absolutely no idea what was going to happen.
Were you laid off immediately?
Mm-hmm.
Had you anticipated that at all?
Never gave it a thought. Like I said, you just thought the way the war was going, you thought it was going to last forever. Nobody, I don't think anybody that worked with me had given a thought to what was going to happen. And then we were told you started drawing your unemployment. And I don't remember how much it was that we were getting. $25 a week, I think, was what we were collecting on unemployment. And we had to go into Long Beach to get it. And the fish panneries were still working. They never shut down. And there wasn't any other jobs around. But they would tell us, you go down to the cannery, they're hiring. You went down to the cannery and they hired you. I mean, you didn't need experience to work there. I worked at the cannery off and on for about 3 months. But you had to have a telephone. They called you when the boats were coming in. And you'd race like mad down to the cannery. And you'd pack the fish that came in that day. And then maybe you wouldn't work again for 2 or 3 days. And I'd call you again. I was out 4 months when Douglas called me to come back to work. I never even went back to the cannery to clean out my locker. I hated that. Oh, I hated that. And what little you made at the cannery, they subtracted from your unemployment check. You got just... It had to be $25 a week because I was only, I had, when I went back to work, was making a dollar an hour. And that was a big raise.
How did it feel to you at the end when they all of a sudden laid you off? And you were faced with unemployment and no job.
Absolutely empty. You couldn't think, I was just, well, let's face it, the soldiers started coming home. And you take 20, 25, 30,000 people from one factory alone, and there were all these others. Lockheed had the one in Lakewood. And Downey. There's one over on the other side of town somewhere. All the little feeder plants, there were thousands and thousands of people out of work. I mean, it was much worse then than it is now. And you knew then, as a woman, that there was no chance of going out anyplace else and getting a job. If you didn't get back in at Douglas, well, there was just no place to go. Of course, there was the clothing factory starting up downtown and like that, but I wasn't about to go into one of those. That was not my line at all. I went back, did go down and brushed up on some of my office studies, reviewed my shorthand and typing and stuff at a business college downtown, thinking maybe I could get a job with that, but I didn't like it. I never did like office work. So when they called me one day and said, come on back, I couldn't get there fast enough.
I'd like to go back and ask you if there was much teasing of the women by the men, sexual advances made, comments made, that kind of thing.
Not too much, no, not unless you ask for it. You can always lay yourself open to those. But those that were interested in it, they met the men halfway, sure. But if you weren't so inclined, they didn't force themselves on you. They were friendly, they acted like your big brother, they come along, they put their arm around your shoulder. They let you know that they liked you. You could be friends, you could talk. You didn't have to put up with any sexual abuse or anything like that. But in every group of, like I said, of women like that, we had our party girls. And they weren't fooling any of the rest of us. We knew what was going on. And they had their Saturday night parties. They would say, well, Saturday night parties hell over until Sunday morning, and some of them would take off and go to Mass and come back and keep on partying the rest of the day. Why? We knew which ones they were. But like I said, the men were, there were so few of them. They could be very picky, very choosy on who they went with and what they wanted.
Did you know of many lesbians that worked?
There were one couple that were pointed out as lesbians. But that was the only ones that I was ever saw. Of course, at that time, homosexuality wasn't brought out. You didn't talk too much about it. I know this one couple of girls, they had been pointed out to me, and I was told that's what they were, but nobody asked them about it or anything like that. There was never any problems over it.
They weren't treated in a different kind of
way. No. You'd see them set off by themselves and maybe hold hands or something like that, but they weren't very, they just didn't force it on anybody else. And like I said, I was told they were, but I was never interested in that. There could have been a dozen other couples around, and I wouldn't have paid any attention. I'm the last one to pay any attention to anything like that. A girl could be 6 months pregnant if she had on a loose dress. I would never suspect anything. I don't know whether it's because I just didn't pay any attention to them. Well, you had your ID cards, which you have in every plant. It wasn't, the plant was camouflaged. We had a screen it was wire. It covered the whole plant. It had feathers glued to it. And then there was like a town built up on top of it. And you went down Lakewood Boulevard past the plant. You were totally under the camouflage. And I never saw it from the air, but they told me that it looked pretty real. When it stormed or the rain came, sometimes some of the feathers would float down on us. But it wouldn't have been hard for anybody to come in the plant. I saw, we used to talk about it, and I've known guys to come up and just flash somebody else's picture and walk right on in. They worked there, but they did it just to show us it could be done. So security wasn't. We didn't have people breathing down our backs or anything like that. I always told you if you wanted to go to some other part of the plant, just pick up a blueprint and walk fast and look as if you thought you knew what you were doing. If you were strolling along and fooling around, you would get stopped and sent back to your own area. But as long as you walk fairly rapid, and as I said, carry a blueprint with you, why, nobody questions you. You could be going to engineering or any place, they'd never stop you.
What was the atmosphere like in general?
Most of it was like one big family. People. It wasn't oppressive. There was nobody standing around with whips or anything like that. It was just, you came in, you did your job, and that was it. Sometimes somebody would say, let's have a potluck dinner. Everybody would bring a dish. You could have a half hour, lunch hour was all. You couldn't have a big party or anything like that. They wanted you to keep busy. You didn't do a lot of standing around talking. But still, they didn't tell you that you couldn't stop and talk once in a while, too. As long as it wasn't a habit you didn't indulge in it all the time, why, there was nothing said. Of course, I suppose other areas might have been different, but my supervisors weren't that. They had a grading system we used to laugh at. They graded you on your punctuality, absenteeism, your attitude towards your job, whether you did good work, or bad work, or mediocre work, or whatever. And I could never get over a 90 to 95 on mine. And one day I asked my supervisor about it, and he said, I was the kind that knew rules were made to be broken, and I broke them. We were told, you do not go to the washroom and wash up before the whistle blows. The supervisor did, the assistant supervisor did, the lead man did. And I did. and want to know why I thought I could. I said, you don't go to lunch with dirty hands. Why should I? The rules say you can't wash before the whistle blows, and supervisors shouldn't wash either. And I tell you, you weren't supposed to go to the restroom the last 10 minutes before quitting time. They did. So I did. And that was the only thing he just laughed. He said, you just think rules are made to be broken. So I broke them, if I wanted to. I had one assistant supervisor that said that, tried to tell us that we were having too much fun on the job. You could talk and laugh. He didn't like his people talking and laughing. He wanted work, nothing but work. And I told him, well, the time came when I couldn't laugh on the job. If I couldn't enjoy my job, move me somewhere else because I won't work there. Now, he couldn't enforce it. No way. The whole crew felt the same way I did about it. They let him know that he couldn't stop us from enjoying our job, enjoying each other.
Were you aware of union activity?
Of the union?
Of the union?
Yes, the unions came in. We had our first union election, not election, but vote, just a few months after I went to work there. They had to have two elections before they could get the union in. And then we were told that it would be a union shop, that you had to join the union. That irritates me because I don't like to be told I have to do anything. So I did. I joined the union and I stayed with it until I left, but I thought I never approved of it, the way they took over and tried to just got too big for themselves, that's all.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yes. I don't think that they should have to... right now, every time the union gets a raise, prices go up. It started right away. When the union came in, every time the union got a raise, prices went up, and it will continue going up until the unions are deflated a little bit. You can't, I don't think they have the right to tell a company, a man that's got his own business, to come in and tell him that he has to run it this way or that way because of the union. I believe in a lot of things the union stands for. Safety. I know that that the workers had to organize to get a living wage. I don't believe in companies exploiting their people or anything like that. But neither do I believe in the union hog-tying a company and telling them, like they have in the auto industries and like that. I was trying to remember what union it was this morning. It's making $18 an hour. It's indecent, I think. At first it was good. I mean, it helped. It helped the people in the factories, and I didn't object to it then. But as they grew bigger and bigger, and then the executives in the union, they ran it. It wasn't a union of the people. And we would go to our strike votes, our elections. Our votes didn't count. They were, every time we had a strike vote, they would bring in some hot-headed speaker down there and get the people all riled up. Naturally, they're going to vote to strike. They didn't tell them the truth. They never do. And I think, now I think the union has just, they've created a monster that they can't control.
Did you go to union meetings during the war?
Not during the war, I did after. They didn't have a lot, the union didn't, it didn't get that strong during the war. It was after the war that the union got strong. And there, like I say, the union was divided. You had your executives in the union and their little group. And half the time, if you disagreed with what they were saying, and you tried to get the floor, tried to tell them or talk to them, you didn't have a chance. They didn't listen. They wouldn't let you have. They wouldn't let you talk. So year after year after year after year, the same people just stayed in office, kept growing and growing and getting stronger.
Is that different than you had expected it would be?
Yes. I thought that a union, that we would all have a chance to say, to have our say. But you didn't. So I am not exactly anti-union, but I'm not exactly for the union either.
Racial incidences during
no,
the war?
Not in the plant, no. Like I said, we didn't have that many. I only remember two colored women worked in our area. No Hispanics. No other minority groups at all. There was just no reason for any racial incidents. After the war, yes, I saw black men that came back to work that had been in Japan or in the service and came back and expected the white girls, white women to meet them, give them the same, you tried to treat them as the same as you did everybody else without the familiarity that you could have with a